Welcome to a special edition of the Sala Monster Sounds Off, episode 442, here for Tuesday, May 24, 2016. I am the Sala Monster, and as many of you know, I am going to be out of the country into next week, and will not be around this weekend to do a normal full episode of the podcast. So this weekend, we're going to be doing a mailbag-only show, answering nothing but your questions. That'll be this Sunday, episode 443. But I didn't want to let a week go by without talking about what happened on Raw, especially coming off the events of Extreme Rules, the big return of Seth Rollins. So I said, why don't we do at least a Raw review show? So that's what this is going to be. I'll probably push this out to all platforms too, so not just iTunes and Stitcher and the like, but throw this up on the YouTube channel as well for people maybe that have not heard the podcast before. So this is going to be nothing more than a Raw review. We're just talking about the show last night. It'll be an abbreviated show. I do want to mention one thing, though. We have a new shirt that went up in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees earlier today, this morning, in fact. We had some requests, you know, a few requests here and there from some female fans of the podcast who felt neglected by the fact that we had a Sound Off Guy shirt, things very guy-oriented. So we now have a Sound Off Girl shirt up in our store. So if that's something that you'd be interested in, or maybe your girlfriend or sister, wife, what have you, you can get them a Sound Off Girl shirt. It's up on ProWrestlingTees.com/SalaMonsterSoundsOff. All right, now, with that out of the way, Monday Night Raw last night was live from Baltimore, Maryland. I am taking a look here as we speak. Normally, I throw a poll up on Twitter when the show ends. There's still a day left to vote. We already have almost 1,600 votes as I look at this. 65% thumbs up, 35% thumbs down, which is actually a pretty good percentage. Overall, you seem to be pretty pleased with Raw. I was too. I think overall it was a good show. I thought there was some strong wrestling. They moved things along for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view coming up on June 19th. We already know, I think it's 7 competitors, and we know of 5. I could be off. Maybe it's 8 slots. Normally it's 7, though. We already have 5 names in the match. Show opened with, who else? Seth Rollins made his big return the night before, laid out Roman Reigns with a pedigree to a hero's welcome. And, you know, we're talking about this on the podcast many months ago. I'm sure a lot of podcasts were. What's going to happen when Seth Rollins comes back? Man, this guy's going to be the biggest babyface on the planet when his music hits and he comes back. Man, he's going to be just over like gangbusters. And he was, you know, with the pay-per-view in Newark, he sure was. Probably got the biggest ovation of the night. And people love the fact that he laid out Roman Reigns of all people. So naturally, he comes out here, gets a very positive response. Although it seemed like he was milking it for a little too long. I don't know if he was expecting more or not, but it was still a great ovation. And in the end, he decided to tell the crowd that you people didn't believe in me. You thought I was a weak champion. And basically, in so many words, he said, fuck you, to the crowd. He all but did that. That would have been awesome if he would have done that, by the way. But Seth Rollins is still a heel. He is not back as the red-hot babyface. I think a lot of us were kind of hoping he would be. Roman Reigns did come out. He got vociferous boos from the crowd here in Baltimore. So even though Rollins was out there just insulting the crowd and just talking down to everybody and doing everything he could just to come off as just the biggest dick in the world. And he was getting boos. Some of the stuff he said, it was working, but there were still a lot of cheers for him. And when Reigns came out, you know, it was just Seth Rollins, I think, he could have set, you know, half the audience on fire. He still would have gotten more cheers than Roman Reigns did. So Reigns was not very well liked here. And Rollins ended up bailing. Shane McMahon came out. They made the match official. So they're going right into it. They're not wasting any time here. We're not getting the slow burn. Last time we saw Seth Rollins, he was the WWE champion. He never lost the title. That was kind of the bigger point of the promo here, is that he got hurt, his knee buckled, and nobody ever beat him. He is the uncrowned champion. And so in a way, it kind of makes sense to go into it, because what are you going to do? You're going to, you know, put him in a number one contenders match? The guy has a claim to the championship. So they're going to have that match at Money in the Bank. Here's the thing, just to talk a little bit more about this whole heel face thing, because there were a lot of people that were upset. I was looking, like, in our own Facebook group, and and on Twitter, and I even saw some editorials that people did on other websites about whether or not this was a good move or a bad move. It's the move. No. My take on it is this. If he's a heel now, that's the way they want him to be, then I say fine. I say fine. The last time we saw Seth Rollins, he was part of the Authority. He talked down to people. He was generally an asshole. And so it kind of makes sense that he would come back and not be this completely different person. He's basically back to being the Seth Rollins that he was in late 2015. So it makes sense. I'm okay with it under one condition. And if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, you know where I'm going with this. I still feel a double turn is the best possible thing you can do. I don't care what Seth Rollins said last night to get the crowd to turn on him. It doesn't matter. In wrestling, it doesn't matter. You could be a bad guy one day, and the next week, you can get the crowd to cheer for you. We've seen it time and time again. So it does not matter what he said last night. I still feel the way I felt, you know, all those months ago, that a full-on heel Roman Reigns, you could say, oh, he's already a heel, right? He's already getting booed. People don't like him. He's acting smug some weeks. I'm talking like going all in here. I'm talking like he comes out the next week or the next night, let's say if it were to happen at the pay-per-view, you put a mic in his hand, and as much as you can in a PG environment, you let this guy loose. You give him some bullet points and you say, just go out there and play off your real emotion. Because he's a guy who I'm sure it gets to him. I mean, we were talking about Raw last week, and in the middle of his promo with AJ Styles, people are chanting, "We want Rollins." And instead of, you know, just letting it kind of slide by, he's got to respond to it. Well, you know, Rollins ain't here, you're getting me. And, you know, John Cena is one of the very few people who, I think he's at the point, it's been going on with him for so many years. I really don't think it affects him. I think it's he finds it amusing. I don't know that Roman Reigns is completely comfortable with all the heckling yet. Maybe in due time he'll get there. But the point is this, I'm sure there's a lot of pent-up frustration and he can tap into that, and I just think there's a great heel within Roman Reigns as the champion. And I think there's a lot of great babyface challengers for him, including Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins being at the head of the pack. Because if you look at the lay of the land right now, you've got Roman Reigns as the de facto top hero babyface. John Cena's on his way back. I don't see John Cena being in the main event right away. I think they want to give Roman Reigns the, you know, his space and give him a chance to grow. So Reigns is at the top of the pecking order as far as the championship is concerned. Seth Rollins right now is a heel, so you've got him as a challenger. And after that, you know, where do you go? Who's next? Brock Lesnar? I mean, he ain't going to be back until August, and I don't see him challenging for the championship, and I don't think people look at him as a heel either. You've got John Cena coming back. He's a babyface. Dean Ambrose, he's a babyface. You've got Chris Jericho. I don't know that people are clamoring to see Jericho challenging for the title in pay-per-view main events. You just got two matches out of AJ Styles, so you can't go back to that. Bray Wyatt, he's due back, I think, any week now. But again, babyface Roman Reigns against heel Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family. Been there, done that. The last time we saw Bray before he got hurt a few weeks ago, we started to see a little bit of the turn with him, right? It was like, wow, okay, the crowd's getting behind this guy. Maybe he's going to be the next big breakout babyface. And I still feel that way, by the way. So I know we're always talking heel turns and face turns, turn. You can't turn everybody into the same thing. That's why the double turn is what makes sense. So you're not having too many baby faces or too many heels. Reigns, I think, ends up at a role that he would be really good at. He's got a lot of baby face challengers, more so than he has on the heel side. I think Seth Rollins will do just fine. You give him a chance to run as as the top hero, and you can get a couple of pay-per-view matches out of that. And I just think it's money. I think babyface Rollins and heel Reigns is money. And I just like that dynamic. Even Dean Ambrose. And I'm going to talk about Dean Ambrose in a little bit. Because Dean Ambrose has cooled off. Like you would think this guy has a fucking giant ice pack strapped to his back. So I'll talk about him in a little bit. But Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose were pitted against each other at least once. I think maybe twice. Actually, Survivor Series. And then I think it was at the main event of Fastlane maybe. The triple threat with Brock. We've seen that before. Two crowd favorites, although I guess, again, you call Roman Reigns a crowd favorite. It didn't seem that way, but two baby faces against each other, been there, done that. Well, if you turn Roman, and Roman has always been buddies with Ambrose, that's the one bond that they have not broken. And I don't even know that you have to break it necessarily. I mean, if Reigns has a change in attitude, maybe Ambrose confronts him and is like, hey, what's going on, dude? You could still keep them friends. It would be a very interesting dynamic. You don't necessarily have to have Reigns, stabbing him in the back, for example. But there's another interesting dynamic. If Reigns goes in that direction, you've got Ambrose, who the people love. It's a match we've seen before, but it kind of puts a fresh spin on it. So anyway, that's my view on it. I don't have a problem with Rollins coming back initially as a heel if the plan were to do a double turn. But having said all of that, do I think that's what they're going to do? No, I don't. So I can't sit here and tell you that this was a huge mistake and they fucked up until we get to Money in the Bank and we see what they do. I'm going to guess we are not going to get a double turn. I don't think we're getting any kind of turn with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is their guy. I've almost, practically just all but given up on the idea at this point. It just is what it is. I mean, he's their superhero that they want. I don't think they had him run through AJ Styles in two straight matches and everything else they've done with him just to suddenly have a change in heart, or a change of heart, I should say. So, look, it's not an ideal situation to be in for him. Rollins comes back, steals a lot of his thunder, and we're supposed to boo Rollins because he's the evil prick, and I just don't think that's the reaction that they're going to get, but I guess we'll find out. This was a night of Money in the Bank qualifiers, though. We had Sheamus up first against Sami Zayn. Sheamus's new gimmick appears to be that he is on a crusade against the so-called New Era. And I will say this, if we don't have to hear the words New Era anymore, I'll join that crusade with him. And I'm hardly the biggest Sheamus fan. I mean, I don't hate the guy, but I'm hardly the biggest Sheamus fan. I will join that crusade with him if it means we don't have to hear them say those two words over and over and over again. He pointed out in his little backstage promo here that he won the Money in the Bank briefcase last year. He cashed in on Samoa and Cena at Survivor Series, which is true. He did. He didn't have a very long title run, but he did win. So he lost to a Helluva kick out of nowhere. Sami Zayn literally got back in the ring. I think they were outside. And then out of nowhere, he hit the kick and he pinned him. And I look at this and I say to myself, this is progress. Because traditionally, I know he hasn't really been focused on much right now or lately. But Sheamus is one of the more protected guys. And that brogue kick finish, which he went for the brogue kick and he missed it. Had he hit it, I have no doubt he would have gotten the pin, because they protect that thing like it's the pedigree. Which is why I think the pedigree is such a great move for Seth Rollins. For all the people that think, oh, he can get a better move. There is no better move for Seth Rollins to have than the pedigree. And if I'm Seth Rollins, I'm loving the fact they gave me the pedigree, because that's the one move that they will not destroy. They will not diminish. They will not make that move look weak. It will be protected. And so long as it's protected, then he's protected. At least when he hits it. Which is not to say that, Roman Reigns wouldn't kick out of it. Roman Reigns did kick out of a couple of Styles clashes the other night, but he is the superhero, so that's just how it goes. But we have Sheamus here losing to Sami Zayn. I say this is progress. Why do I say that? There was a time that the idea of Sami Zayn, or a guy like Sami Zayn, beating Sheamus, let alone to qualify for a big match like Money in the Bank, would have been unheard of. Okay, just ask Dolph Ziggler. He'll tell you. How many times has he lost to Sheamus? How many times has that guy been kicked in the head? How is he not retired due to concussions? So there was a time when this outcome here, what we saw here, this wouldn't have happened. So I look at this and I say, you know what? That's progress. And we know that Sami Zayn is going to be involved in one of the biggest matches on the next pay-per-view. So I'm actually pretty damn happy with what they've done so far with Sami Zayn, just keeping him in that mix. Just like I'm happy with what they've done, largely with AJ Styles. And again, I'm going to talk about him later also, because he's had a string of big losses, which I wouldn't have done. But AJ Styles is another one. He comes in from another company, and I mean, right out of the gate, man, big surprise comeback in the Royal Rumble. He's in a program with Jericho. He transitions right into a championship feud. He's basically in the headline segments on Raw every week, him in the club. I mean, he's in that mix. How can you complain? He's going out there. He's giving the kind of performances that he is. So Sami Zayn's another one who I was skeptical about what would happen to him when he got called up to the main roster. It's still early, I know. It's only been a few months. But so far, overall, I'm happy. So Sheamus then jumps Apollo Crews. Apollo Crews, I mentioned him on the podcast this past week, and I said you should put his fucking face on a milk carton because he just vanished. It's been weeks since we've seen this guy on TV. But there he was. He was in the back doing a promo, and in the middle of his promo, Sheamus attacks him from behind. And I guess Sheamus thought that this promo was so generic, he just had to take this guy out. So he yelled at him while Cruz was laying on the floor, writhing in pain. He yelled at him, "All these New Era guys trying to take my spot." So Apollo Cruz, who, as I mentioned, has not been seen on Raw in weeks, gets laid out here. Then later in the show, he loses to Chris Jericho, clean with a codebreaker. In another Money in the Bank qualifier. Which, him losing to Jericho wouldn't ordinarily be a huge deal. Jericho's still a big, a big name. Wouldn't be too big of a deal. Had Jericho not walked to the ring looking like he was the victim of a car bombing the night before. This guy was just patches of bandages all over his body from the thumbtacks that they had to pull out of his skin the other night. After that asylum match with Dean Ambrose. So all of that, and Cruz still couldn't beat him. Still could not beat Chris Jericho. Now, maybe he was supposed to. I would say there's at least a slim possibility that maybe he was supposed to win this match. I don't think he was. But I say that because there was a scary moment. And so maybe they had to change the finish. I don't know. But again, I don't think that's what happened. So Jericho was going to go for a lion salt. Cruz is laying on the mat. He goes for the lion salt. And Cruz is a very athletic guy. He does a kip up. We've seen him do it a million times before, back in NXT. I don't know exactly what happened here, but he kips up. It looks like either he just couldn't get out of the way quick enough as Jericho was coming down for the landing. I think what may have happened, I think he may have stumbled backwards a little bit. Just a little bit. So he couldn't get out of the way in time, and Jericho lands right on top of this guy's head. Now, thankfully, Jericho wasn't coming off the top rope. He wasn't 7 or 10 feet in the air. But still, he comes down right on top of this guy's head, scared the shit out of me, after what happened to Jesse Sorensen in TNA. It also didn't help that I just interviewed someone on the podcast this past weekend, who broke his neck. So I see this, and I'm just, thank God it seems like he's fine. I haven't read, anything about him being hurt or anything like that. Hopefully he's fine, but it was scary. Cesaro pinned Miz with the neutralizer to qualify for Money in the Bank and the last qualifier of the night. There are still two spots open. But the last qualifier of the night saw Dean Ambrose pin Dolph Ziggler with the Dirty Deeds. Kind of quiet for this match. Maybe people just didn't know, which mid-card guy here to cheer for. I got to talk about Ambrose. I don't know. I mean, there was a buzz around this guy going into that WrestleMania match with Brock Lesnar. And then he lost in fairly quick, decisive fashion. And ever since then, it's been a story of potted plants and apathy with this guy. It just, he just feels cold as a block of ice right now. And I'm not saying he comes out to dead silence or anything. The people, they still like him. But there's just no real buzz around him when he comes out and when he wrestles. And there was a few months ago. There are people who will say, I was having a debate with somebody I wasn't having a debate, but, they made the point that in one of the threads in our Facebook group, Ambrose has never been good. You're just seeing him in the right spot. This is where he belongs. And I don't subscribe to that, it's always been this way with Ambrose and he's where he belongs, because there was a period of time where this guy was hot, man. I mean, he was one of the hottest guys they had on that roster, and he was getting big reactions every single week, and it's just not happening right now. It's just not happening. And this is a guy who won both matches in the Jericho feud. It could have easily gone the other way, or they could have gone 50-50, even Steven had Jericho win the cage match the other night. But no, I mean, Ambrose beat him at Payback, and he beat him at Extreme Rules, and yet still this guy comes out here, and it's just like, all right, I mean, you can feel that way about Ziggler. It's been that way for years with Ziggler. I mean, that's no big shock. Guy goes out there and busts his ass, but, You know, he's locked into that spot, and people see him, you know, they see him in that spot, and that's just how it is. You know, Dolph Ziggler is never going to get above a certain point. It's just not going to happen. I think the death knell for Dolph Ziggler, and I don't want to make it so all morbid and stuff, right? I don't like the guy. I like Dolph Ziggler, and if you've, you know, heard me talk about him before, I pitched tons of ideas, you know, what they could do with him and this feud. I'd love to see him wrestle this guy. And I look back and I say to myself, I don't know how much longer he'll be in the company. I know he re-signed a new deal last year, so he may be around for many years to come. And I hope he's happy and he still goes out there, God bless him, and he just busts his ass. And he bumps like a madman. It's not like he's out there just cashing in a paycheck and half-assing it. But I look at this guy and I say to myself, when his story is told, or at least this chapter of his career in WWE, the final straw, the death knell for this guy, is going to be Survivor Series in 2014. When he was the benefactor of Roman Reigns being out with that groin tear, because you know it would have been Roman Reigns probably as the sole survivor at the end of that pay-per-view after Sting came out and laid out Triple H. But Roman was hurt. Dolph was part of that Survivor Series main event. Sting came out. He laid out Triple H. He laid out Rollins, I think it was, with the Scorpion death drop that Rollins had to lay there. I think it's... and sell for about 6.5 minutes. But Dolph got the pin. And Dolph, I believe, was the sole survivor of that match. Dolph Ziggler, standing tall at the end of that Survivor Series match. Now, as is the case with the McMahons, it wasn't really about Dolph Ziggler. It was about Sting, and it was about the McMahons. Right? People cared about Sting. It was his first appearance. And they didn't go off the air with a big Dolph Ziggler celebration. They went off the air with Stephanie McMahon pitching a little, you know, temper tantrum in the middle of the ring. So that's really what it was all about. Just like now. When they had that contract signing for the Divas match last week with Charlotte and Natty, it wasn't about them. I mean, it was nice to throw them a bone and say, oh, the women got the main event. But like I said, I guarantee you, if Shane McMahon and Stephanie were not supposed to be out there, that would not have headlined the show. It was not about the women. It was about... if it was about any woman, it was about Stephanie. It was not about the other women. It was about her and Shane. So, to go back to the Ziggler thing, he wins that match, and I thought to myself, wow, are they really finally going to get behind this guy? Are they going to come back around on him? Because it just seemed like they soured on him when he got hurt, and they took the world title off of him and did the double turn with Del Rio, and he just was kind of floating along ever since, and it seemed like they were... It was just an opportunity there to finally do something with this guy and say, all right, it's time to shit or get off the pot with Dolph Ziggler. Let's see what we can do with him, and then either he's going to drop the ball or he's going to run with it. And they never even gave the guy a shot. They ended up doing that stupid angle where they fired Ziggler and they fired Ryback, and of course they were all back, you know, a couple weeks later, I think it was. But that, to me, I look back, and that was the final kind of death knell for the guy. I don't think it's going to get better than that for him. So, I don't want to see Dean Ambrose end up like that. I know Dean Ambrose, it's not his time right now. Roman's the champ, Seth is back, and he doesn't really factor into that mix. And also, I'm not going to, you know, I wouldn't blow a Shield triple threat on Money in the Bank. You know, if anything, I think that could be a real big main event for SummerSlam. I'd like to see it at a WrestleMania, but I don't know if they could wait that long. At least wait till SummerSlam. But, you know, the point is, he doesn't really have another spot right now. You're not going to put him in the championship feud. He's got to do something else. He won here, so he's going to be in the Money in the Bank match with Jericho, so they'll kind of continue their feud for a third month, I guess. But man, you know, he's out here wrestling in this match, and even the night before at the pay-per-view with Jericho, when I did the review for Extreme Rules, I said this match was no good. And Jericho, you know, taking the thumbtack bump and everything, I mean, these guys, I'm not knocking their... performance or Jericho going out there and doing that. You know, he's got a lot of guts to go out there and do that, but people just didn't seem all that into it. They popped for the thumbtacks. You know, anybody's going to pop for thumbtacks. Anybody can fall on thumbtacks and get a big reaction, but that match was a disappointment, and it shouldn't have been. That was the thing that was really noticeable to me on the show, and it seems like it might be the start of a pattern here, and I hope it's not. Because they could still get a lot of mileage out of, you know, Ambrose pretty high up there on the card. Like I said, maybe even build to a Shield triple threat. I don't want to see happen to Ambrose what's happened to Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler, there may be no coming back from that, but for Ambrose, I think there's something there, but you've got to give him something to really sink his teeth into and give people, you know, something to really get excited about. You don't have him hosting segments, you know, with a potted plant named Mitch. I mean, that might be entertaining one week, but the fact they turned that into a freaking storyline is ridiculous. I mean, that might be fine for New Day, but, you know, you could be doing a lot more with this guy. So Ziggler is going to have a technical wrestling match with Baron Corbin on next week's show. They set this up. There was a backstage segment, an interview with Corbin, just absolutely terrible. And I've seen Corbin cut, you know, pretty good promos before. This was not one of them. This was that scripted, rehearsed garbage they have these guys do. But they set the match up for next week, so they'll have a technical wrestling exhibition for the feud that will not die. The New Day came out with a giant cake to celebrate 1,200 episodes of Raw. They mentioned that Raw was 23 years old. I think some weeks with the 3 hours, it feels like this show lasts 23 years in a night. So yeah, Raw is 23 years old. It's time for Raw to get a job. They tease putting the cake in the fans' faces in the front row. Then they tease putting it in the announcers' faces. The social outcasts came out and attacked them from behind. That led to a match. Thing went maybe a minute and a half at the most. New Day won, and they put the cake in Heath Slater's face when it was over. We got another Darren Young Bob Backlund skit, you know, because Baron Corbin and Bob Backlund look so much alike. He wanted Darren Young to recite the names of all the presidents in order, which Darren Young said he couldn't do. And I'm just sitting there going, come on, man. Tunney, Monsoon, Piper. This is easy. Backlund started to recite the presidents himself. Darren Young just goes, damn, coach. He was impressed. And Bob Backlund, he was not impressed. He was mortified that Darren Young would use such foul language. Hope he never listens to this podcast. And then he told Darren Young to do 200 jumping jacks. I have no idea where this is going unless they're reuniting the primetime players, but any excuse to have Bob Backlund on TV on a show that is so scripted and rigid and regimented, Bob Backlund just sticks out like a sore thumb, and I fucking love it. Enzo Amore is back. He was being Enzo Amore on this show. I mean, what more is there to say? He's awesome. So I'm glad to see him back. We got a singles match between Big Cass and Bully Ray, and Colin Cassidy won with the Empire Elbow. We then had the Charlotte, Dana Brooke, Ric Flair State of the WWE Women's Championship address. This was the split between Charlotte and her dad. Ric Flair started just randomly talking about how proud he was of Charlotte and was getting all emotional. And Charlotte ended up doing the little swerve turn where you think she's going to say one thing and then she ends up, you know, saying another. And let me just say, let me get the positive out of the way first. Charlotte is very good. Charlotte is really coming into her own as a heel. I mean, it's just the right role for her. Verbally on the microphone, she's improving. You know, every time I see her, she's getting a little bit more comfortable. She's a pretty good talker. This was not one of her best nights. And I say that because, first of all, let me go back a little bit here. They started chanting boring, the fans did, during Ric Flair's speech, as he was speaking. Ric Flair, of all people, they started chanting boring. And I can't blame them, if only because this thing was starting to drag pretty early. So they were getting restless, they were getting bored. By this point, it was also getting kind of late in the show. Charlotte, once she started to kind of turn on her father and she launched into this whole tirade about how he was always on the road and she would have to watch him on TV and you were an absentee father and you were never home and basically saying you're dead to me. All this just awful, horrible stuff, and she's mocking him. Oh, you're going to cry? You're going to cry? She's basically, you know, mimicking every fan on the internet who, you know, probably was thinking the exact same thing. And sure enough, Ric Flair did cry. He cried on cue, although I don't think it takes much for him to cry. So that worked in this case. So she's just mocking him and really just being a bitch and sticking it to her dad. But she got rattled. She got rattled because as she kind of was starting to drone a little bit on and on, the fans started chanting "What?" at her. And I like the fact that she at least tries to play off of it instead of just like, stick to the script. We can't acknowledge that the people are chanting something at me. So I like that, but it didn't work because it rattled her. And she kept going back to it. Like, it's one thing to acknowledge them, like Undertaker did that time, you know, say, "What if you sleep with your sister?" And the idiots chanted "What?" You know, it's one thing to do that. And Big Show has done that. I've seen him do that also. She just kept going back to it like it was really bothering her. And I was starting to get a little uncomfortable for her as the segment went on. But then even after that ended and she just kept going on and on and on, I don't know if it was just that she was forgetting some of the words or it just got really, really awkward. I don't know if other people felt the same way. And I'm not trying to put her down like, oh, she's a terrible, you know, a terrible promo or anything like that. That's why I wanted to preface this with the positive, because I don't feel that way. But I'm not as high on this segment as some other people I've seen are. I didn't think this was really all that great, to be honest with you. I mean, she got some great heat for it because, she, you know, Ric Flair, he's an icon. It's your father. How can you say such things to your father? It's an easy way to get the people to hate your guts. But this just got really awkward, I felt like, as it went on. She was kind of stammering and stuttering over her words and whatever. I don't know. It felt off. It felt a little off to me. The whole point was that Flair appears to be done. She said, "Get the hell out of my ring." He was crying. He was sobbing. He walked off in the back. Arn Anderson gave him a hug and said, "I'm sorry." They caught up with Flair. They said, "Do you have anything to say? Any reaction to what just happened?" He said, "Not tonight." And he very sheepishly walked off. So it was a great way to get sympathy on Flair and, again, get some heat on her. I don't know. Maybe it just went on for too long. Again, maybe she did forget herself at certain points, but I don't know. By the time this was over, it just felt very awkward and a little clumsy to me. And I think the heckling with the "what" chants may have been what threw her off and kind of started that little spiral there. We got an AJ Styles promo here before the main event, which was AJ Styles against Kevin Owens in the final Money in the Bank qualifier of the night. So AJ Styles comes out, and what does he do? He just lavishes praise on Roman Reigns. "Man, Roman Reigns, brother, I didn't know how tough this guy was." And of course, the fans boo because they don't want to see AJ. They already saw AJ Styles lose in two straight pay-per-view matches to Roman Reigns, which was a tough pill for a lot of people to swallow. And they were great matches. But they saw this guy lose twice. Most of them did not want to see that. The last thing they wanted was him to come out here now, licking his wounds the night after, just to put over Roman Reigns. If anybody's going to need to you know, be put over here, AJ should have put himself over. So he's in there putting over Roman Reigns as this great opponent, and people are booing. And he talks about how he blames his loss on the Usos and the club for getting involved in the match. He wanted to go it alone. These guys got involved, and in the end, they cost him the championship. Well, this doesn't sit well with I always say Gallerson. What? My first instinct is to call him Gallerson. And Andows. The fuck is wrong with me? Anderson and Gallows. There we go. Jesus. It's only Tuesday. It's not even that late in the week. So anyway, Anderson and Gallows come out. They object to this characterization of them as being spoilers, and they somehow cost AJ the championship. And things break down between them. AJ just is like, we could still be friends, but I don't think we should be together anymore. We no more club. We should go our separate ways. And Anderson and Gallows are like, no. You can't have it both ways. You know, you don't want to have anything to do with us, then we are no longer friends. Yeah, and they were bringing up how AJ is not the same AJ that we knew in Japan. If this was Japan, we'd be going out in Roppongi and drinking. I popped, by the way, for that mention of Roppongi. So the club is no more, which I kind of figured. I think I even said that a few weeks ago here on the show. People were pitching a fit. Oh, the club. The club? That's the best they could come up with. And I said, it's the club because these guys are not going to be together that much longer. I figured Balor would be in by now. We'd have the Balor Club, which I think is probably still going to be the end result of all this. I think Balor's probably going to come in and you know, align with these guys. And we may be in for an AJ Styles-Finn Balor feud, which I think would be phenomenal, no pun intended. And, you know, when you think about what AJ Styles has done in the last few months, like I said earlier, I think that overall AJ Styles has been handled, has been portrayed, booked, whatever word you want to use, far better than I ever would have thought. If you would have told me 6 months ago, hey, listen, you know, WWE is going to bring in AJ Styles, my first thought is, A, what's his new name going to be? You know, Alan Jackson or something. And B, well, let's look at the NXT roster and see what opponents he lines up with. Because I never would have thought he would be fast-tracked to the main roster. Samoa Joe wasn't fast-tracked to the main roster. Nakamura wasn't fast-tracked to the main roster. A lot of guys, most guys now, are not. But I guess they probably looked at it and said, well, this guy is fucking super talented, and he's almost 40, and we really don't have any time to waste, and we need bodies. And, you know, this guy's hurt and that guy's hurt, so let's bring him on in. And it was the right decision to make. And overall, I can't say that I'm disappointed, because, again, we just got done seeing two championship pay-per-view matches with AJ Styles in it. But, having said that, I look at what he's done the last few months. He lost, inexplicably lost, to Chris Jericho at WrestleMania. That got him a championship match. Well, the four-way the night after did, but still. From that, he goes to a championship match at the next pay-per-view. He loses. He goes to a championship match at the most recent pay-per-view. He loses. He wrestles Kevin Owens here on Raw in a Money in the Bank qualifier. He loses. So now we have a pattern in these big matches, going back to WrestleMania, that AJ Styles, as great as he is, and as fun as it is to watch him, is a fucking loser. And I have to hope that this is going somewhere, because the announcers even mentioned the fact, you know, it's been a tough few weeks, it's been a tough few months, but it's been a tough few weeks for AJ Styles. The fact that they would bring that up and say that tells me, hopefully, this is leading to something. And I'm hoping that it leads to Balor hooking up with Anderson and Gallows, and we get ourselves a nice program going into SummerSlam, maybe between Finn Balor and AJ Styles. Maybe AJ Styles has to find two other guys to, you know, back him up against the Balor Club. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a hell of a lot of potential there in a feud between AJ and heel Balor. That's one thing we haven't seen Finn Balor do yet. I mean, we've seen the Demon. We haven't seen heel Finn Balor. I think that would be very interesting. Somebody emailed me earlier and said, well, what do you think about now that they've officially split up? You know, there's two of Anderson and Gallows. What if Balor debuts and he is aligned with AJ? And we have ourselves a little tag team feud. I could see it. Yeah, I could see that happening. I don't want to see it. I really don't want to see that. And, you know, the only way out of that would be ultimately to have Balor then, you know, a few weeks later, turn on AJ and then do the big, you know, put up the too sweet sign and align with Anderson and Gallows. But then AJ Styles looks like an even bigger fool, because we just saw that a few months ago where him and Jericho became a tag team. And what did Jericho do? Jericho turned on him and made him look like an idiot. So I don't want to see that happen again. I'd much rather see Balor come in and be on the opposing side. So I'm going to reserve judgment. I'm going to hope and assume that they've got something planned for this guy. They're not going to leave him off the pay-per-view. Obviously, he's going to be doing something, even if he's not wrestling for the championship. But, you know, it you look at that, and there is a pattern there, and it's not a good pattern. And they need to turn things around with this guy. They got to get him a couple of big wins. So he failed to qualify for the Money in the Bank match here, but he was no less great here on this show than he was at the pay-per-view the night before. I think with his performance here on this show and this match and some of the bumps he took and that match with Reigns where he was just a madman just bumping around all over the place, how he didn't, you know, break his back. I know he had a bad back a few months ago. He's like he didn't break his back on that backdrop spot onto the announce table. But you look at these two performances back-to-back nights here, and to me, AJ Styles is the MVP of this company right now. You know, he may not be the champ, but he is the MVP. And like I said, the big bumps continued here. He took a giant powerbomb on the flat part of the steel ring steps. At one point, Kevin Owens ended up winning clean in the middle with the pop-up powerbomb. I was happy to see Kevin Owens get a big win. This is one of those matches where you don't know who to root for, right? You want to see Kevin Owens do well. You want him to win. But you also want AJ Styles to win, and you realize that, hey, AJ needs a big win here. So, I would not have been unhappy with either outcome here in this match. I think Kevin Owens being a Money in the Bank is going to be great. You know, he was part of the big ladder match at WrestleMania. It does take a little bit of the, allure maybe is the right word here, because they just did a 7-man ladder match at WrestleMania. Instead of a briefcase hanging from the ceiling, it was a title belt. So it's almost like we're getting the same kind of match here. You've got Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens once again. I mean, they may be the only two, but, you know, these guys are in the Money in the Bank match. It's like WrestleMania all over again. That's why, they could have just done this. I know it ended up being a great match, but I would have much preferred to see Zayn and Owens one-on-one at WrestleMania. Let that be their first match. Then you could do the rematch of Payback. This just, it almost feels like a retread now. Like, we just saw these guys in a multi-man ladder match a few months ago. Thank God they didn't kill themselves. Hopefully they don't get hurt here. So Kevin Owens qualifies, and by the way, he is my early pick to win this Money in the Bank match. We don't know all the participants yet, but he is my early pick. He will be part of his very first Money in the Bank ladder match. That makes, so far, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Cesaro, Chris Jericho, and Dean Ambrose. And I think there are two spots open. I know Neville is due back soon. He could be back any week. Maybe he earns a spot in the match. Maybe it's SmackDown tonight or Raw next week. You know, he's back and they put him in a qualifier and Neville gets in there. I'm not sure how wise that would be for this guy's first big match back coming off a broken ankle to be in a ladder match. But, I mean, this kind of match is right up the dude's alley. We know John Cena's coming back on Raw next Monday. He's coming off an injury. They could put him in there. I think, you know, if he's not feuding with Rusev for the U.S. title... I think a scenario that would work, maybe you keep Rusev away from him for Rusev's sake. That would be nice. Keep him away from Cena and do something with Cena and Del Rio. I know we saw Cena at WrestleMania because, you know, the guy's inhuman. And so he was able to make it back and do a big spot at Mania with The Rock. But before that, the last time we saw him, he got kicked in the head and beaten for the U.S. title by Alberto Del Rio. So there's some unresolved business there between the two of them. Maybe Cena and Del Rio get the last two spots in the Money in the Bank match. At least that would make sense. So, again, Owens is my early pick, at least until I see who the others are. Before we wrap up here, I want to make one more Money in the Bank related comment. Because I got two questions emailed to me, which I can't use on the podcast this weekend because I've already got all the questions that I'm using. But I wanted to address it here because I've seen it talked about elsewhere. This idea that, well, are we going to get the first ever women's Money in the Bank ladder match this year? We've never had one before. And this whole Divas Revolution concept and this new wave of women that they have, and they're not divas now, they're women, and we have a new belt. And so why not put them on that same level and give them the Money in the Bank treatment? I want to say it was last year I got a question asking me, do I think there should be a women's Money in the Bank match? And I said then... No, I am not a fan of that idea. I am not a fan of doing a giant ladder match with the women. I think a singles ladder match would be fine. But if you're going to have 4, 5, 6, God forbid, 7 women climbing the ladder, trying to climb the ladder all at once, and, you know, that ladder is going to be the same height as it is for the men... I mean, I guess they could probably lower the belt down and have a smaller ladder. Yeah, they could do that. But if you're going to have all these women just trying to climb the ladder and clamoring for this briefcase and trying to unhook this briefcase, you know, someone's going to get killed or tear out a knee or something. The guys end up killing each other in these types of matches. Sheamus tore his shoulder in one a few years ago. But the thing is, you know, the male roster is far bigger than the women's roster is. You got to keep that in mind. I mean, I don't know what the number with the women right now, I don't know what the number is up to, but you take out Charlotte, right? Because Charlotte's the champion, so she wouldn't be in a Money in the Bank match. Take her out of the equation. That leaves you with Natty, Paige, Dana Brooke, Becky Lynch. There's Sasha Banks, who apparently is hurt. She may have a concussion, so she's out. Emma. She's hurt. She just had back surgery, so she's not doing anything. You've got Nikki Bella. She's still out. She may never wrestle again. You know, and then I guess you have Alicia Fox. That division is already racked with injuries. And as it is, it's a smaller pool of women than it is a pool of men. Got far more men on the roster than you do women. if you have another one or two women or three women that go down, you're in trouble. So I just think it would be stupid to do one of those matches because the risk, I mean, the risk is just far too great. Maybe take the ladder out of the equation, you know, but if you do that, then what do? You do a tornado match, you know, all the women in the ring at once. That would be a disaster. I think the best thing, if they want to have a women's briefcase, I don't have a problem with that. I'm okay with, you know, doing a women's Money in the Bank. I just think it would be better to start a tournament, maybe, next week on TV, have the finals on the pay-per-view, you know, and it could be a normal one-on-one match, and the winner is handed the briefcase that they can cash in at any point in the next 12 months. You're already going to get the big finale anyway with the men. They're going to have the big blowout, you know, crazy spot ladder match. You're going to get that anyway on the show. So you can have a briefcase, but, you know, it's contested in a one-on-one match in the finals of this tournament. And then you have a woman who can, you know, carry the briefcase around. And, you know, I look at somebody like Dana Brooke. I could see Dana Brooke winning the whole thing. They seem to be very high on her right now. They've aligned her with the champion. So I think what that does, if she wins the briefcase, it creates some potential drama. Because she's going everywhere right now, seemingly, with Charlotte. She's shadowing her wherever she goes. Ric Flair has been sent home by his daughter. So now it's Charlotte and Dana. This woman's going everywhere with her. And the entire time, you also know that, hey, she's got the briefcase. So she's all nice right now. All is cool. But she's got that briefcase that she can cash in at any time. So I think it actually creates some intrigue. Yeah, because someone like Sasha, she doesn't need the briefcase. She's going to win the championship outright. But Dana Brooke, I could see her benefiting from something like that. But I to do it in a ladder match, I just think is insane. So that's the Raw review for this week. Went a lot longer than I thought I would. If you have questions for the podcast, just be aware, again, we are doing a mailbag show this Sunday, answering your questions, but the questions are already they're already there. I got them all the ones that I'm going to be answering, so anything you send me would not be for this weekend show. If anything, it would be for the following weekend, or I can reply back to you directly at some point. I'm going to be out of the country and away for the next several days. That's why we're doing things this way. We'll be back to the normal format for the full show the following Sunday, which I believe is June 5th. If you are listening to this for the first time and you've never heard a full episode of the podcast, we don't just talk about Raw. We don't just talk about WWE. We talk about NXT. We talk about Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, although I haven't been talking about ROH as much, and I've got to try to correct that. But we take your questions. We do a buy or sell segment weekly. I think you might enjoy it. So you can check it out. Full episodes are up on thesolomonster.com and through Podbean, which is our host. Every Sunday afternoon is when the show normally drops. It's not any particular time. It goes up on iTunes, Stitcher. We're on Google Play Music now. We are all over the place. Here on this YouTube channel, we usually just reserve this for bonus audio content like pay-per-view wrap-ups and interviews and such. But I wanted to push this out everywhere and just give you a little taste of what the full shows are all about. It's just me. It's just me, myself, and I. There is no co-host. I know not everybody is a fan of that format, but hopefully you like what you hear. And you can give me a follow on Twitter, at Solomonster. And that's all I got right now. So I want you guys to have a great week. Have a great Memorial Day holiday this weekend. And don't forget episode 443, all mailbag edition this Sunday, and then back to normal the following Sunday. So until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay, that's racist.
Well, no, it's... I'm just
racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, yeah, those are the racists.
The Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.